Mission.
Yep.
Good morning, Pensacola. It's Monday, November 28th. Thank you for joining us. We have got another great show lined up for you. Downtown Pensacola may be getting another 200-plus unit condo apartment project downtown. It's going to be at 110 East Garden Street, right next to the Well in Perfect Plain, where Union Public House is going to be building its new restaurant, where a hotel is going in. It's what the city now refers to as the East Garden District. It's Reynolds Music used to be on that corner. 242 units. It'll be four stories high. It'll have a parking deck in the center of it, similar to what we've got with Southtown. There'll be courtyards and pool and wraparound retail on the outside. It went before the planning board, architectural board, on November 17th. As is always the case in Pensacola, they didn't approve it. They gave conceptual approval, but they want them to come back, so they've delayed it even more. But hopefully that'll get off the ground. That's 242 units. That's on top of what we've got with Palmella Apartments, which is further down, about 605 Garden Street, past Everman's. That is another 240-unit apartment complex that's going up, which looks to be pretty close to opening. And then that's not counting the 54 luxury apartments that are going to be done at the Waverly, where the old corner of the Scammy County School District Administration building. That's not counting the 600 units that are also, well, we don't know if it'll ever happen, but Inspired wants to build at the Community Maritime Park. So we could end up having, over the next 3 or 4 years, some of it's within the next year or so, we'll have 500 more units downtown. If the Waverly project comes in, that's another 58. If we get the Community Maritime Park in the next 4 years, that's 1,000, over 1,000 units downtown, 1,100 units downtown. So we could have anywhere between 1,000, 1,100 to 2,000 more people living downtown before 2026. We'll just keep an eye on all that. We'll go ahead and break for commercials. We're going to give you the news, weather, and traffic. We come back, we'll have Eric Gilmore. There's a lot going on with EMS. Got to start Monday with Prince.
Yeah, you do.
We're WCOA, 1370 AM, 104.9 FM.
It's November the 28th, Black Friday, and the day in 1984 when this song was released from Purple Rain, I Would Die For You.
Of course, today is Cyber Monday. This is where you're supposed to be looking for really good deals online, although I think all of us are now so used to going online.
I was doing it on Black Friday.
Right, Cyber Monday is no longer that big a deal, but it used to be the case. That was the case. Escambia County is about to launch its EMS Coordinated Opioid Recovery Program called CORE. We have over 40 opioid overdoses a week now in Escambia County, some of the highest in the highest rate in the state of Florida. To talk about the CORE program, we've got Escambia County Public Service Director Eric Gilmore. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Rick. How are you doing today?
Fine. I know this is a pilot program. The governor announced the funding for this late in the summer. Palm Beach County has done it. It's had a huge impact on repeat overdoses, reducing those. For our listeners, what does it mean for Escambia County? How's it going to look here?
Well, first and foremost, it's a program that hasn't been done in this area. What it's going to do for us and what it's going to look like is your typical overdose. Escambia County gets called, 911 gets called, we have an overdose, we respond to it, EMS handles the patient, gets the Narcan to the patient, gets them back with us. We take them to a hospital. The hospital treats them. They try to offer any services available at that moment in time. Maybe they take the hospital up. Maybe they don't, or they get referred. And then from there, it's just, that's it. We don't know what happens to them. So what we're trying to do is be that intermediary and make sure that we have a warm handoff. You've heard that term, warm handoff. So that when we go to the, when they're at the hospital and we put them in a program or off of the program and try to keep them in a program, that we have follow-up and follow-through with those individuals. So we're making sure that they're going to their appointments and getting the treatment. They're taking their Suboxone. We're going every other day to their door so that they've got that continual follow-up, and it's just not, you know, what I'd say, a treat and street, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So they're not forgotten about. So we're hoping with that warm handoff and with all the partnerships. I'm going to tell you, this is phenomenal, the partnerships that we have here in Escambia County and how fast this group come together with, a, you know, HCA Florida West, Sacred Heart Hospital, Baptist Hospital, Community Health in Northwest Florida. Community Health is, you know, they're going to have all kinds of services offered to the individuals if they can't, if they don't have a primary care physician or they don't have a doctor. So it's just not, they're not going to be forgotten about. They're going to have, if this person truly wants to be helped, the services will be there. The partnerships in the community are there to help that individual out. There's no reason for these people not to be able to follow through with a program and truly get off the opioids or whatever addiction they're on. It could truly be helped. So, and they're going to be followed through. They're going to be watched throughout the program and talked to continuously and met at their door with telemedicine, with nurses, with EMTs. It's just we think that that piece has been missing, and we're hoping that's going to be the key element to make a somebody's transition for addiction successful.
The voice you're listening to is Eric Gilmore, a long time part of this show. He's a public safety director for Escambia County. Eric, I think the issue that we've come to grips with is opioid, its addiction is insidious. It is so hard. It's not like it's a simple matter of willpower to no longer be addicted. It gets into your brain. You crave those highs, those hits, and it's not an easy thing to drop. And I think that is the piece that this CORE program that Governor Santis has been pushing. This does create, like you said, this wraparound service, these warm handoffs to where we can get them connected with Community Health Northwest Florida, who has the expertise to be able to help them wean off of it. Because in my interviews over the years, and I've been following this for now 5 or 6 years, is that the recovery is not just getting Suboxone. It's you've got to have the counseling. You've got to figure out what the triggers are. You have to have your hand held through the process.
You're absolutely right. Suboxone's been in the community for a while now. It's been available for anybody who has wanted to get on it. But you're right. Once I prescribe it to you, and then, you know, Godspeed. I hope you stay with the program, and good for you, you know. We're hoping that this now, with the staffing that we have in place and the holding of the hand, as you said, that's exactly right. To make sure, you know, we care about that individual. We want you to get off of it. You know, we want you to benefit from this program. So we're hoping – we haven't seen that in the past. We've never done this before, so we're hoping that continual, you know, wraparound services, that continual, hey, how you doing, that continual face-to-face, that continual, we'll get that person in the right mindset to beat this addiction and get off of whatever they're on.
Now, what have you done have to do with EMS? What have you had to change in your training and your hiring for the CORE program?
So for the CORE program, the state funding afforded us the opportunity to hire additional staff just for this program. Mm-hmm. So our 911 trucks will be doing 911. We'll have additional staff that's been afforded through the CORE program that'll be in an SUV-type vehicle, and they'll be going, you know, out in the community, what we call community paramedicine. There's going to be a nurse and an EMT in that vehicle. They're going to have Suboxone. They're going to have an iPad for telehealth. So if they need a doc right then and there and they need to get a prescription, they can dial them up, and the person can have telehealth right there with the crew on scene. So that's the training wise, our staff's always been able to treat, administer Narcan, revive the person, get them back. But this crew that's going to be out there day to day, going door to door, and making face-to-face contact, hopefully will be the difference in that person continuing on the program and making sure they're getting the needs met and the services that they need.
Now, this has already been started in Palm Beach County. Any kind of feedback on how well it's working there?
No, absolutely. So our staff has met several phone conversations. Not only our staff, but our community partners, talked to Palm Beach down there, found out some of the pitfalls, found out it's got a pretty good success rate. When I say pretty good, I'm saying a good success rate. So it's obviously working down there. We're hoping that that model will absolutely work here and we can continue to track that they've done in West Palm, but they've had phone conversations with them, conference calls, found out what's best working for them, what didn't work. They've done this, so we want to make sure we avoid the pitfalls up front that they've already gone through and the hard act, so we can go ahead and be on the success track
right.
And be like those guys down there. So
great. Yeah, I think Dave Trussell told the News Journal that it's like they've got 84% of the people that have gone through the program haven't had another overdose since.
Yes,
so that's a huge high success rate. Eric, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Rick, thank you. Thank you for bringing this important topic to light. And when we absolutely get this thing rolled out and we're starting with the program, we're actually going to have, a big piece about it. And we'll get with you then and let you know exactly what's actually happening. So thank you, sir.
All right, great. Take care.
All right.
Bye. Cena, y'all, community health's been gearing up for this also.
Yes,
y'all
we've had a therapist to work with the program. And, it's one of those things, it's not like you when you quit smoking and you don't ever want a cigarette again.
Right.
It's ongoing. It's for life. And that's not a failure on these people's parts. It changes your brain. You need to have your hand held for life and to keep going back for help.
Yeah,
and,
it's not a matter of willpower. This reprograms the brain, and the brain is constantly looking for higher hits, higher highs, and this is scientific.
And we've all talked about how, we've all had somebody in our lives that had this problem.
Yeah, and the good thing, last week we had Jeff Gaddy from the Levin Papantonio Rafferty Law Firm. They're the ones that have been taking on all the pharmacies, these pill mills that were created around the country. They've taken them on and gotten billions of dollars worth of settlements. That money, some of that money, is going to come back to Northwest Florida to help with programs like this. Because just think, this is 40 overdose cases a week average in Escambia County. That's involving EMS. That's taking people away from other, other services, other people that are within need. It's an intense program. So the cost that it's putting on our society, robberies that are created by people that need to go buy drugs. Heroin is an opioid. As pills have been gotten harder and harder to get, people are shifting to heroin. Fentanyl is put in with heroin to make it more appealing to people so people can get a different kind of high. All these things click this way. And so it's taxing our community in ways that we kind of gotten accustomed to. It's happened so subtly. So keep an eye on this program. We'll have more on it later. Of course, now what we've got going on that a lot of us have been watching over the weekend is World Cup. It's been fun to watch. I've been following Tom Rivers' Twitter account to find out what Wells is doing. And we've got Tom on the line now. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I tell you, the game, so many upsets.
Yes.
None of the ones that you expect to do well, they're stumbling. The ones that you knew would not have a chance are coming up with upsets. A lot of thrills and spills. If you're going to put down a bet here in the UK on these games, you got to take your life in your hands because the form book is thrown out the window. You don't know which team's going to show up. And again, tomorrow, that's the big one. USA going to take on Iran. If the U.S. wins, they get out of the group and they carry on into the knockout competition. So anything less, a draw or a loss, pack your bags, go home.
All right. Do you pronounce it Qatar or Qatar?
I used to say Qatar. Then in the second Gulf War, we were told, no, I'll stick with Qatar. So I'm kind of between two horses on that. I can go with either one.
Well, you're the expert. You're the guy I've got to follow. I've been saying guitar forever, and then I picked up cutter too. And now
exactly, we had a shift. I don't know, about 20 years ago. I don't know. Take your pick. You'll be right either way.
All right, now, Tom, this as any world event, there's controversy. What are some of the controversies that have popped up other than not being able to buy beer at the stadium?
That's a
real controversy. Yeah. Other things, you know, some of the migrant workers that that built these eight stadiums paid literally peanuts. That is a concern. That is an issue. The LGBTQ groups are saying, look, you can't even wear a rainbow hat into the stadium without somebody at a turnstile saying, take it off. So that is not being allowed. So yeah, it's a very strange one, a very strange one indeed. Politics and sports are often intertwined on these international stages, but it's very, very obvious this time around in Qatar.
Well, now, are you rooting for Wales or England?
You know, I got friends in both camps. Wales hasn't been there since 58,
right.
So you got to put your heart out to them. In real terms, England didn't play so well against the U.S. They've got a legitimate shot at going pretty far into the tournament. It's one of those. I ain't got a dog in this race. I'm just going to sit back and watch it and see what shakes out. But
it's like watching Alabama closely to the U.S. Yeah, for us,
yeah.
It's like watching Alabama and Auburn. I don't have a dog in the hunt. I just like to see them kill
each other.
There you go. Also, the U.S. Soccer Federation started some controversy with the version of the flag that they aired on social media. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess it was they put it up on their website. They're saying, hey, Tuesday, you know, must watch game. I think it's 2 p.m. Eastern. Put it in your time. And, it's taking on Iran. We have to win. And for kind of like protest value, they put up the Iranian flag without the Islamic Republic emblem. So that would be like the Iranians saying, hey, we got a big game Tuesday. We're taking on US of A. And you don't have the right number of stripes or
right.
You don't have the right number of stars on the flag. And it does tick people off in the other country. So the message was received and it was changed to the legitimate flag. But they were doing that in protest, supporting those that were been on the streets now for what, 9 weeks? Mm-hmm. 9 weeks in Iran.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. They're pretty upset about it, I guess.
Yeah, very much so. But again, it's hard to like, you know, you want to say no, this is a sporting event, and you know what? It's funny when the games start, it is a sporting event. Mm-hmm. You're watching the bouncing ball, but after the whistle at 90 minutes. You go into any pub here, and you're going to be talking politics again. Mm-hmm. But for an hour and a half, you're not hearing any political stuff. You're just hearing cheers or groans, depending on what's happening on the pitch.
Well, we're going to do our best to try to get you back this week because you're our expert, and each time we'll debate Qatar or Qatar. We'll just go back and forth.
you get an A, whatever word you choose. How does that sound?
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Tom Rivers in London.
Yep.
Yeah. We're getting a bunch of news coming on that Mayor D.C. Reeves, that's what we'll be saying now. It'll take a while to get that sink in. He is going to do press conferences. They put the announcement out last week. He will do his on Tuesdays instead of Mondays, and it'll start at 10 a.m. That gives him time. One, to get with the staff on Monday, find out what's going on in the city, and develop a message that he wants to get across at the press conference. And doing it at 10 instead of 9, that means he doesn't just roll out of the car and with a cup of coffee. And he has to, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he handles it. What we do know, that if he continues to do it, he will get better. That's the thing that I've always noticed with press conferences, is that the more people do them, the better they get at it. It's a little bit nervous. There's some missteps early on usually. But the more they do them, the more comfortable they get, the more forthright that they get, and the better, more concise they are in their messaging. Grover, from where he started 4 years ago to where he was last week with his last press conference, was a tremendous change. Look at Lumen May as county commissioner, what he's been doing as he speaks more and more publicly, how more polished he is and how more he knows where he wants to go. He knows his message. So these early press conferences, there are going to be a lot of questions. The media is going to, as we saw last week, they really worked hard on affordable and attainable housing and pressed the point, and he's going to, you know, he'll get better. But I'm glad that he's taken out. What I'm very happy about, and Cena, you should be happy about, is that we're no longer debating transparency in city government. Yeah, we're no longer debating, is there going to be a press conference or not? There are press conferences. And I know that was what, when you were on the transition team with Quint and for Grover, that was your area, was transparency.
Yes, but I also worked with D.C. Reeves on that area. So he had a good, he was in all those meetings and had all those discussions with me. So the plan is going forward is very much what Grover was already doing.
Right, and he's keeping many of the same people. He's already said, he said on this show last week, and we'll have him as a regular guest on Real News with Rick Outson, is that he's not going to make any rash decisions on people. He wants to get to know them. He wants to work with them for a while. And fortunately, City Hall is well-led right now. The departments are in pretty good shape. We're not having all the train wrecks, all the dumpster fires that we were having 4 years ago. And so D.C.'s running into an operation that's running fairly smoothly, and he'll have time to figure out who he wants. You know, is there someone better that would better fit for what he wants to do? Doesn't mean they're not a good leader or whatever, but he's got to figure out his team, and he needs to do it fairly quickly. But I'm glad that he doesn't have to rush in any department as much as they had to do 4 years ago. So I think that's one great thing that Grover has done for him, is give him a pretty stable ground to go on. Same thing over at county with Lumen May taking over as chairman. You're looking with Wes Marino now in place that you're seeing the county operate so much smoothly. There are departments that need changes. There's still some leadership, and there's some people that are retiring out of the system, well-deserved. So there's changes that are going to be happening over there, but I think that what we're seeing at the county now is that it's also running smoothly as a whole. So I'm pretty optimistic about where we're going to go over the next couple of years. Doesn't mean problems won't occur. They will. Doesn't mean that there aren't places we can get better at. But it is what we're seeing is just a really nice period right now. And part of my outtakes in this next issue of In Weekly about where we are and the sense of optimism that we picked up last week in all those meetings. All right, we're going to go ahead and break. When UWF Argos won huge, came back. Big comeback. We're going to have Will Kennedy recap the game for us. We're Real News with Rick Outson.
You're opposite me of my primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and countless screaming Argonauts, you bird of friend.
We are Pensacola. First radio station started in City Hall nearly 100 years ago. We're WCOA, and this is Real News with Rick Outson.
And this is the only song that I know of that has Argonauts in it. I worked on it, though.
And talking about Argonauts, we've got Will Kennedy to recap this amazing comeback this weekend on the football field in Cleveland, Mississippi.
I appreciate the deep dive into the record. always fantastic on a Monday morning. Rick, my heart is still trying to recover. Blood pressure slightly elevated still after what went down over the weekend. I mean, I know, I'm thinking back to, it was the Cleveland Browns, for those that are old enough to remember, of the 70s, the late 70s and early 80s, they called the Cardiac Kids, the first team that I remember. There have been others through the years, but this team, this Argo football team is kind of right there, and they've done it all year long, and you kind of can't doubt them no matter what the situation. They were down 14 points going into the fourth quarter. It looked dead in the water, right, so to speak, and what a comeback. To outscore a Delta State football team that had beaten us in double overtime in the regular season, you know, top 10 ranked program, to outscore them 28-3 in the fourth quarter. I mean, what can you say? Advance to the third round, get a chance to host another home game at Penn Air Field this week. I mean, it was something else. It was almost unbelievable, but I was there and saw it with my own eyes, so I have to believe it.
Yeah, it was amazing. A group of us were in a bar, and we were watching the Alabama game. Of course, I call it the Alabama game. Watching the Alabama game, and they had UWF on a screen on the side, and everybody's your attention kept going over there because you're saying, "God, we're so far behind," you know. And Delta State just looked so good, and we just couldn't seem to get things together. And then all of a sudden, it started clicking. And the final score doesn't really tell how close it was because we had that interception to seal the game with 20 seconds left in the game. But gosh, it was exciting to watch just on that little bitty TV because we didn't get a big TV, but we got a little TV with UWF on. It was fun. Everybody was watching it.
Yeah, you look at 38-27 when it's done, and you think, okay, well, they handle business. But, yeah, as you're right, Rick, it was Anthony Johnson Jr. with a pick six in the final 30 seconds of the game that, kind of extended the margin. But Argos got the football back down 3 points. They'd come storming all the way back, tie the game up. Delta State gets down and kicks a field goal with 4 minutes left in the game. The Argos get the football back and go on that drive and kind of get out near midfield. They'd run about 2 minutes off the clock. All of a sudden, you're down under 2 minutes and got a holding call that backed us up 10 yards. And there's so many little plays in the course of a game. Obviously, you can look back and say, well, if that doesn't go that way, it's different at the end. And Caden Leggett, our wide receiver transfer from Texas Tech, he makes a catch after Pee Wee Jarrett scrambles around, and Caden takes it up the sideline and literally extends the football out on a third down play, third down and 15, I think it was, just enough to get the nose of the football to what he needs to pick up a first down. And, you look back at a moment like that and think that, right there, if he doesn't make that play and give that effort and have that heads up ability to know what he needed to get, and they're able to just take it from there. And once again, they ran the football. We ran the football exceptionally well, more than 330 yards on the ground. But you're right. It just wasn't clicking. The offense just seemed, kind of out of gear. We start the game getting a fumble on the second play of the game, but then go nowhere and have to kick a field goal. And right then I thought, is this going to be that kind of day? I got to give credit to Pee Wee Jarrett because he has had some bad first halves, and this was one of those days you kind of felt like you looked at the numbers and like he just doesn't have it today. He finds it in the fourth quarter. I don't know how he does it, but he just tends to make every play that you need to have made down the stretch. And the defense, I thought, really played well the course of this game. They continue to be really good this year. You knew it was going to be that kind of Saturday, as I mentioned. We kick a field goal, doesn't kind of work after forcing a fumble. And they, on a fourth and two in midfield, second possession, run a fake punt and get 55 yards. And, you're kind of like, does Delta have the magic on a rainy day in Cleveland, Mississippi? But now this Argo team, and this number jumped out at me. My partner for the day on the color side, Quentin Randolph, who was a receiver on that 2019 team, set some records in the national championship game that year. He looked down and he said, "You know what? We're 11-2, 11-2 in the playoffs in just our sixth season of football at UWF, and on the road in pure road games, this team has never lost. They're 9-0 in pure road games in the playoffs. I mean, find me another team in any sport that's ever done anything like that."
Right. Well, and you're playing on a rainy day in Mississippi Delta when it's cold, and it can be a miserable place to play when you've got the rain coming down and it's a little bit chilly out there. And, to get fired up for a game like that's a challenge.
No, there's no doubt about it, especially within the team. I think we talked about on Friday, the team was having to stay over in Grenada, Mississippi, about an hour plus out and drive in and come to the hotel right by the stadium that they didn't get to stay in the night before, but sit there and have breakfast in a banquet room type thing, and then have to sit around and wait and get over to the stadium and hostile environment. It was a hostile environment. Our photographer Morgan Givens posted a picture that we ended up taking down after of a Delta State fan, and one of our players in the foreground, a Delta State fan in the background, and he's given a salute to our player, two-handed, we'll say. using two digits to let him know how he felt about him. People were, I mean, you know, some of the stuff that people were yelling down on the sidelines, and people were telling me they were having ice thrown at him on the sideline. It was a hostile environment, no doubt about it. And yeah, tough place to play for sure. And, you know, you hate to see anybody's season end, student athletes at this point, because everything's on the line. But the Argos get to march on, and you look up. I think every other region, there's four regions in the NCAA playoffs for Division II. Every other regional final, and that'll be the next round here coming up on Saturday, is a one seed versus a two seed. Then you get to Super Region II. We're a three seed, and then Wingate is technically unseeded, so you've got, you know, this kind of weird matchup here, and the Argos are looking to get back to the Final Four for the third time in six seasons, and I think they got a good opportunity to do that on Saturday with Wingate coming in.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll have you on Friday, and we'll preview that game. But the game was so exciting, I said, well, I'll take a chance. Maybe I could get you on this morning. So thank you for doing it, and gosh, you're going to have to chill out. You got to. Finals coming up. You got a couple more classes before y'all have finals.
No, this is the last week of regular classes, okay. And so finals are next week. And so, you know, these student athletes, I mean, on the road, and we're on the road with them, but they're on the road and they're travel. It's tough on them, and they've got to get, you know, the schoolwork done too. But one thing I do want to say is, you know, everybody, if you're just a casual football fan, and you know, there are plenty of people around here who they're going to root for Alabama, or they're going to root for Ole Miss, or they'll root for Auburn or Florida State and Florida. But, you know, if you're in Pensacola and you've got that kind of connection, you like football, or you just want to come out and have a great day, come on out Saturday. It's a 1 o'clock kick with Wingate coming in. Let's get a huge crowd for these kids. I mean, this is something to celebrate here in Pensacola, what the Argos have done over the, you know, over the six seasons, but also this year. Come out and support these kids. Let's get a big old crowd on Saturday and see if we can get a win at Penn Air Field.
All right, we'll do it.
What time is the game again?
1 o'clock kick on Saturday. We'll kick at 1 o'clock, hoping for. But we can get a 70-degree day with some sunshine. I'll take it in late November or into December. Actually, beginning of December, Saturday, December 3rd. So yeah, 1 o'clock kick, and let's catch up on Friday, and we'll get everybody ready for it.
All right, great. Will, have a great week.
You too. Thank you.
All right, take care. Listen, it is Cyber Monday. One Cyber Monday that I think you want to look at is Pensacola Little Theater. They're doing BOGO. You buy one full price ticket, and you get the second one for free. So, and you can do all that online.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right, we'll make that one work. But, yeah, so, but this is the day you're supposed to be getting all these special deals. So open up your email, of course, Cumulus, we can't, because they'll tell us that it's spam and we'll get our hands slapped.
Yeah, we can't.
They'll create a fake one just to catch us.
So, why were you looking at, you know, Cyber Monday deals while you were at work?
Exactly. It's a trap. It's a trap, Cena. All right, we're going to break. We're Real News with Rick Outset. We'll be right back. We're Real News with Rick Outson on WCOA, Wonderful City of Advantage.
I thought Taylor Swift was a good one for this one. Merriam-Webster has released their Word of the Year, and for 2022, it is gaslighting.
Now, what is gaslighting? Because I always get a little bit confused.
Okay, the official definition is the psychological manipulation of a person, usually over an extended period of time, that causes the victim to question the validity of their own thoughts, perception of reality, or memories.
Like, you weren't really harassed.
No, you weren't really.
He was just trying to be friendly.
Yeah, you weren't really insulted publicly. That, you know, you're just being a little sensitive.
Right.
Webster says the searches for the definition of the word on the website was up 1,740% in 2022.
Yeah, and it has to, probably some of that has to do coming out of COVID, where people did everything on the internet, and you know, now you're back in the workplace, and it's amazing how low performers can dominate a workplace so easily, and the high performers say this isn't right, and the boss more often than not goes with the low performer.
I think a lot of times those types too, and we need to get Rachel Ann on that one, but those people are doing it in all facets of their lives too,
right.
So
right.
They're good at it.
Listen, we got some bad news over the weekend. Randy Oliver, who was the county administrator from 2010 through 2012, passed away. He was living here in Pensacola. It came just days after he retired as a county administrator for Citrus County. You may not remember Randy. I was very close to him when he was here. I felt like he was the professional when he came in to run county government. He had an engineering background and an accounting background. He had to deal with the BP oil spill. We had the real estate market crash. Revenues for the county were shrinking. He had to figure out how to get a budget together. And he did it not trying to be a fishing, hunting buddy or golfing buddy of the developers in town or the county vendors. He ran it as a professional, which, of course, meant that he had to be fired. Then commissioners Gene Valentino and Wilson Robertson wanted George Tuart back. And the rumor is that Kevin White was going out as a county commissioner, and one of their buddies offered Kevin a nice paying job if he would vote to fire Oliver and bring back George Tuart. And he did, and unfortunately for Kevin, when he got out of office, and this is a rumor, I don't have any, nothing that I can go on the record on, but he never got the job. But it was a big power shift. I remember getting the phone calls. I kept hearing the rumor that Randy Oliver was gone, and I thought he had done such a fantastic job of being such a professional at running the county. And I made phone calls, and sure enough, the fix was in, and Randy was fired. He worked as a consultant for a couple of years because of his background in county government. He later was hired by Citrus County in 2015 and just recently retired the first part of this month. On November 8th. And you talked to the commissioners. I read the articles in the Chronicle, which is the newspaper for Citrus County, and all the commissioners talk about how he was the best administrator they ever had, that he helped put them on the map, that he dealt with so many issues that they needed to deal with, brought them into the 21st century. And just imagine what it would have been like this last decade if we had had Randy Oliver still running the county and not have all the bizarre things that happen in county government, because Randy knew how to deal with problems and deal with issues. So I hate to hear for his wife, who, they were getting ready for their big retirement years. They'd gone on a trip to the East Coast, or they at least had one planned based on the articles that I read. But Randy was one of those good guys that was out there. We've been very fortunate with Wes Marino, someone who is definitely a professional also and doesn't get involved in the politics. But Randy Oliver is going to be missed. I've got the article on the blog this morning. I came in early and worked on it. You can look at it. You can link back to our argument, our article that we did back in 2012 when he left, when we really walked through his time as county commissioner and the things he had to deal with. And you realize what this guy would have done during the pandemic, how he would have been a difference maker during the ice storm and the floods of 2014, how he would have helped us with recovering from Hurricane Sally, that we wouldn't have had the monkey show that we had at county government with all these people that had no idea what they were doing trying to help us, and if Randy Oliver had been there. So for his family, I hate to hear this, and for Randy, he definitely was one of the good guys. You can read the articles. I've got all the links. Go to ricksblog.biz and check it out. But, he'll be missed without a doubt. Definitely one of the good people out there. Another good article that I came over the weekend, the Wall Street Journal, which is conservative publication, very Republican-leaning, they came out with their analysis, a viewpoint of their analysis of the 2022 midterms. And I thought it was very accurate. They said for the Democrats, they're going to have to learn how to win the Electoral College without Florida, Ohio, and Texas. They've got to be able to build electoral votes without having that. They're going to have to build supermajorities among the Hispanic, African-American, Asian voters to offset the huge majority that Republicans have in people without college degrees out there. They found that for the trouble with the Republicans is they've got to do something about the Trump influence over the candidates. The voters did not want to relive and refight the 2020 election. That's what they clearly showed out there. They were wanted to address current problems than relitigating the 2020 presidential election. This was midterms of referendums, and this is from the Wall Street Journal. It's the editorial is How Independents Dampen the Red Wave. Midterms are usually referendums on the president, the incumbent president, and this was a referendum on Trump, Biden, and the Supreme Court. And the right wing of the Republican Party lost all of those. There was more disapproval of Trump Republicans and the Dobbs decision reversing Roe versus Wade that offset any discontent with the Biden administration. Independents broke ranks. We are still in a partisan world where politics are so strong on the Democrat and Republican side. Swing voters still exist, and swing voters care about issues over the candidates, and they're looking for candidates that will work on the issues that are important to them. That's the lessons that the Wall Street Journal said came out of that election. And Sane, I thought I think that's what I'm seeing too. That people really here we're in a heavy Republican market, but DeSantis sort of speaks to the mainstream conservatives. You know, and I think that they feel more comfortable with him. And in the candidates that won around the country, they're the ones that seem to do the best. You know, so I think that is, and that's from the Wall Street Journal. So those who think I'm too liberal, I think that actually captures the story, captures it very well. It is Cyber Monday. There's cyber deals out there, but there are other news stories out there.
Yes, you've probably heard. Florida woman making us proud. She's filed a $5 million lawsuit against Kraft Heinz, saying the company misled consumers about how long it takes to prepare their Velveeta microwavable mac and cheese.
How much you suing for?
$5 million.
$5 million.
$5 million, including statutory and punitive exclusive of interest and costs. She said that they say that it takes 3.5 minutes to prepare, but that's the microwave time. You also have to open the package, and that weighs into it. And
so she had somewhere she had to be within. She had to have that Mac within.
And she lost $5 million because it took 2 minutes more than it says. Yeah.
She probably had it timed with the turkey on Thanksgiving so that it would hit.
How is that $5 million worth it? Well, they said that they released a statement saying they know it's a frivolous lawsuit and they'll deal with it.
All right, we'll see. We're Real News. We're going to break, give you the national news. We come back with Stacey Knowles.
Can I wake you up?
We're Real News with Rick Outzen on WCOA.
It's November the 28th. Happy birthday, Matt Cameron of Pearl Jam. Celebrating the birthday today. He was born in 62 in San Diego, California.
Pearl Jam, part of the last DeLuna Fest.
Yep.
Yeah, had to
most noted spot part of the last DeLuna Fest.
They were big. They and the Foo Fighters. No, Foo Fighters, yeah, they were there too. Right. It was huge. The last DeLuna Fest. That's my reference for Scott Mitchell of the day. All right. We have got last week, Mayor Grover Robinson hinted at a possible project for the old Baptist Hospital campus. They went over there on East Street, I think it's called the West Marino District is the official name for that area. It's 51 acres. He mentioned a possible affordable housing project that was coming in. We finally got some details from Baptist Hospital. They've been a little bit slow in putting out much information about it. It's going to be on 10 of those acres. It's proposed by Paces and Soho Housing, Paces Foundation, Soho Housing. They're going to have to get state and federal money to make it work, and that's still up in the air. The city's going to commit almost $500,000 towards the project, but they have to get the state and federal funding to make it work. 112 multifamily units, combination 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, 102 unit senior affordable housing rental project, ground floor space for amenities and services, parks. It's going to kind of follow the design that Baptist talked about earlier this year. So this is still a lot of things have to click for this project to happen, but at least we got some details on it. It's on the blog, ricksblog.biz. Check it out, and it's really just bullet points on what they released to us late last week. So check it out. It is another project coming to downtown. And more housing is one of the things that the city has really, and the community, talked about what they'd like to see replace the old Baptist Hospital. So that is trying to answer that community need. So read up on it. It'll be coming up in a future council meeting where they'll vote on their part of the funding for it. So keep an eye out for that. The other thing we've got going on is the Double Bridge Run registration. This is, you've got until December 1st to beat the rate increase, and we've got Ray Palmer, president of Pensacola Sports, on the line now. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Rick. How are you this morning? Hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Oh, we had all the girls home, so it was nice. You know, you're lucky. You've got most of your family here, right?
Well, it's funny. I have one who's not home, and not only was he home, but he told us that he's going to make me a grandfather one more time.
Oh, great!
So I've got a full basketball. So I'll have a full basketball team. Make five for us. So we were really excited. They're the only ones that didn't have children, and so we're thrilled to learn a little addition of the family.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, the Double Bridge Run, it's amazing how successful this event. I was fortunate to be in the very first planning committee for the Double Bridge Run. We had to get it past the city council, and I was on the city council, Gulf Breeze City Council. And you okay?
No, I'm fine. Sorry.
I'm teasing you. But, you know, and it was tough because the city of Gulf Breeze, the council was really hesitant to lock down the city for this run. And fortunately, we've always been able to work it to where the city traffic still works. People can still get in and out. But now this has become, the Double Bridge Run is a premier event for runners around the country, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, 100%, Rick. And you're right. The city of Gulf Breeze, working with the council, but really their police department helped us get, I'm sure they did back in the day when y'all were first trying to put it together, as Gulf Breeze has grown and as traffic patterns have changed and things, they have continually come to with solutions, you know, and said, we can make this work and not disrupt, because it is, you know, obviously it's disruptive going right through the heart of Gulf Breeze for an hour or so on a Saturday morning. But they've been outstanding, and then they work with the City of Pensacola Police Department and then the Escambia County Sheriff's Department getting them out onto the beach. It's amazing.
You know, it's limited to 4,000 runners. You'll be running on the new bridge this year, the wider, so it'll be a little bit wider space, hopefully, for everybody to run.
Yes, sir.
And then there's a great party on Pensacola Beach when it's all over. And y'all have worked out the traffic as far as people getting back to their cars, the buses run. It's the logistics of an event like this, because you've got the 5K also that starts at Gulf Breeze Dolphin Stadium. So you've got to deal with runners there as well as those in town. And y'all have worked out a way that people can park their cars and buses take them back to the start line. It's the logistics are a challenge.
Oh, it is a huge logistics challenge. But, you know, after however many years, 26, I think, believe this is the 26th year, we pretty much got it back down to a science. And, you know, yeah, we'll be on a bigger bridge next year. Unless Skanska does some miracle work, we will not be on the full new bridge. But it'll be bigger and nicer every year as we go forward. And the numbers this year, Rick, you mentioned the 4,000. We're well over 1,000 already. We are pacing several hundred ahead of year-over-year sales. You know, everybody like McDonald's, right? And Budweiser, they got to know how many beers they sold on November 28th of last year. So as of, you know, November 28th of last year, we'll be several hundred over. So I encourage people to get signed up before the December 1st price increase. We're also going to introduce, you know, we have the Bayou Hills Run, the other great signature run that Pensacola Sports manages and owns, and we're going to put together a little runner's package somebody wants to give a runner a Christmas present with a little discount.
Yeah, you can, if you register before December 1st and you register at pensacolasports.org, you can get the 15K race for $55, the 5K for $40. Everything goes up The next, yeah, it goes up on December 1st. It's a chance to have a savings on it. Y'all also have special rate workout deals with the hotels for that weekend. It's February 4th, if you want to mark it on your calendar. But y'all worked out with the hotel special rates for runners, too, haven't you?
Oh, yes, sir. Our hotel partners, as you know, are a big part of ours, and we have a significant contingent of Louisiana crew and
right.
Mississippi. Those are great partners that come over, and a lot of locals like to stay because it's Thursday night. Friday night is the expo, and we have a dinner for the runners on Friday night. And then, as you mentioned, there's basically an all-day party on Saturday after the race. And, many of the bars will bring in a special band, and it's just a really great time of the year to be on Pensacola Beach.
Oh, it is without a doubt. Ray, before you go, I just want to let's recap this year for Pensacola sports. Y'all had an amazing year, from the Sun Belt basketball tournaments to SEC soccer to the runs that you've put on, all the high school all-star games that y'all do.
We've had a great year. You're right, Rick. Thank you. And our high school football game is December 16th
at
Washington High School.
Great. And y'all have tickets available for that on PensacolaSports.org.
We can get you there. Tickets for PensacolaSports.org, absolutely.
Okay, great. Ray, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
You thought I had a bad cough some days.
I hope he's okay.
I hope he's okay. what do you got going on, Cena?
As you're shopping online today, you may want to take advantage of some of the opportunities to give to the less fortunate. We've got a lot of things going on, a lot of toy drives. Children's Home Society Christmas Toy Drive is going on. You can get a wish card from their office at 17 DeVillers Street, and you need to have that in by Friday the 9th. And you can call for them for more information. Also, the Pensacola Heritage Community Partnership Holiday Toy Drive is going on in partnership with Pensacola Heritage Title. And they're going to have a couple of different locations to drop those. And those are going to second and third grade classrooms ranging from 7 to 9 years. You can drop a new unwrapped toy to Greater Little Rock Baptist Church, Family Ties Good Eats, or Heritage Title. And Cast and Flights also is taking those. And, of course, EAR and Sue Strawn are doing Communities Caring at Christmas, and Community Health Northwest Florida is helping them collect this year. If you'd like to get more information on how to donate to that fine organization, just you can go on our website, healthcarewithinreach.org.
And the Marines are doing their Toys for Tots program, and this is one of the best programs the local Marine Corps here does the best job in the region. For Toys for Tots. You can go get on that Google machine, find out their locations. They're all over town, Escambia and Santa Rosa counties, to be able to donate to them. Please keep them in mind. It is also, if you're shopping downtown, use your cell phone, take a photo of your receipt and send it up, upload it to downtownpensacola.org, their website. It is, and be able to, you'll be entered in their All Our Want drawing. They'll put you in. The big prize is $1,000, I think, on December 18th, but they do daily drawings for gift cards, so it is something to take advantage of. So please check it out. I'm sorry, it's downtownpensacola.com is the website, and then just click through, find the contest, All I Want, and you can upload it. It's really easy. They're doing daily drawings. As we have Walker on here Friday, they're way ahead of even the best year they've ever done with this. More and more people are shopping downtown. But it's not just shopping. It's restaurants. It's bars. It's, you know, any kind of receipt from a downtown. Not a parking ticket. We found that out. Yeah, I was trying to figure out something to do with these parking tickets, but that didn't help. But there are just so many things that you know, save those receipts, put them up, be a part of it. And what we have to offer in downtown Pensacola is amazing. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap this show up. We'll have Stacey Knowles come in. We'll give you some of the best interviews that we've had on Real News with Rick Alford.